Thanks for listening to the show. Join us online at playvolutionhq.com and learn how to support the show at explorationsearlylearning.com/support.
It's time to lean back and buckle in. This ain't your grandma's early learning podcast. Then again, your grandma probably didn't know what a podcast was. Hey, moms and dads, puppies and kittens, caregivers and advocates, it's time for Shaking Bones. Here's Dan and
Hi Anna. There. Welcome to the Shaking Bones podcast. I'm Dan Hodgins.
And I'm Amy Avila.
In this episode, we're going to talk about reading and writing centers. Amy and I are hanging out together to tackle the untouchables. Sometimes you might even challenge your beliefs, maybe even stretch your comfort zone. But most importantly, we want to make you think. We don't expect that you will have to agree or disagree, but what we do hope is to cause some shaking bones. There was a question, I think even last week, Amy, somebody wrote to me, and then I saw a couple discussions on Facebook regarding what people put in their reading and writing centers. And they were really good questions. I wasn't at all upset about them, but I responded in a way that perhaps people were a little confused about. So I thought we could maybe talk about how reading and writing could be done differently in a program. So one of the things I had talked about is rather than, and I'm not opposed to a writing center or a reading center, I'm just thinking perhaps in addition to that, people could actually think about integrating materials for writing and reading in all of the areas. Now that becomes a little more challenging for programs like yourself because you have that wide range of ages. So how do you handle that in your program?
Well, you know, for a while I tried to have really specific areas set up. And, you know, best practices and a lot of the things that they tell you are to, you know, have these very distinct areas for children. But what I found out with working with children over time is their idea of organization and what belongs where is very different from ours. And each group of children that I have coming through has a very different idea and a different need for what needs to be closer to what. I have things that kind of look like a block area and kind of look like it could be a dress-up area, kind of look like it could be a home area, but our space changes based upon the needs and the ages of the children that we have. But you're right, it is really hard to figure out how to make some of that happen when you have infants and toddlers as well. So a lot of our materials that are too small or too pointy to be, you know, available for infants and toddlers have to be either kept. We keep them in the kitchen because the kitchen is an area that the older kids have a little more freedom to go into, but the younger kids only really come into the kitchen when they're accompanied by an adult. To go into there, and our kitchen is big and we have all of our paints and, you know, everything is there. Not to say that the infants and toddlers don't come in there, but they don't have the freedom just to go in there without an adult being right there to make sure that when they are accessing materials, that it is a, you know, the concern of safety there. So we allow some of those materials, the writing materials, to move with older children, but they kind of check them out. So it's like, okay, here's a pencil, but when you're done with it, I need you to bring it back. And they have journals that they can access anytime that they want to. And there's a couple of pencils right by the journals, so they can take those whenever they want. Our area, the materials are, you know, anything that's really, a lot of stuff is available to them to just grab what they need when they want. But again, some of the things that, you know, might make a bigger mess or have the need for, you know, with small pieces or that kind of things are kept on shelves that are a little bit higher. So you have to be a little bit taller, which some of the children are, to be able to reach them themselves, or they need to ask for assistance to get them down.
Right. So it doesn't mean that it can't happen. It just creates some different challenges because of the wide range of children that you have. But I think you're on target when it comes to, in most cases, it's going to be the preschool or the beginning pre-writing child who is going to be more interested in the writing and reading component. So having that in various places makes it more practical. So I'm always worried that, especially for boys, and it doesn't mean that it doesn't happen for girls, but I always look at writing as something you do on the go, and it has to apply to something that you're doing presently. So if you're playing in the block area and they say, I don't want anybody touching this, I usually make a statement like, well, make a sign. And if they had to go to the writing area to do that, the likelihood is it would not happen because either they wouldn't leave the place, that block area, or they would on the way get distracted. So if there's materials, tape, ink pens, pencils, markers, those kinds of things available at the, say, in the block that look like the block area, that it would be more readily available and relate to what they're currently doing. So I had a lot of sign making going on because that was a popular thing for them to have ownership to whatever they were doing. So writing became almost part of the ownership component.
Right. And one of the ways that we work with the children with that is, you know, a lot of times it's when they're working on something and, you know, they want to make a sign. It's like, okay, what do you need? What can I get for you? And so then they don't have to walk to get it, but one of the adults gets materials for children. Like I said, we have a pretty good flow of materials, and sometimes they'll want to go and get things themselves, and sometimes they'll want you to get materials for them. But, you know, I view that as one of the primary jobs is I'm the, you know, I'm the delivery person. What do you need? What can I get for you? How can I best support the children in what they're doing? And they don't want to stop where they're at, but if they need something that's not in that area, then I am more than willing to go and get that for them.
Right. And again, it says to the children, when we read and write, it's not done at a particular time. It's not done at a particular place. I keep thinking, if it's in my own home, I'm always carrying something around because the older I get, the more I forget. I'm always jotting myself some notes to remind me to think about this or to do this. And I don't go to a writing area, a desk area to do that. I simply have those kinds of things all over the place where I can add the sticky notes or add it to my phone as that component. But it's not done in a writing or reading area. And I think that's the same process I would hope we would create with children, that reading and writing is something you do everywhere. And it's possible to occur for different reasons too.
Right. And so, you know, having, like you said, not only the supplies in different areas, but having different types of supplies too, because they're going to need a different kind of paper or a different writing implement to make a sign, then they might want, a longer piece of paper for writing a big long list of something. And some children just absolutely love to, you know, write their lists, and, you know, having their favorite pencil or what they like when they want to write in their journal. You know, just having lots of different materials, regardless of how you have to organize them because of the ages of the children in your program, you can still have a wide range of different materials available for them as well.
Right. The other component that I see often is where people think the writing center should include an alphabet chart or some sort of number recognition chart or some sort of symbol part. And I like what Judith Schickendant said in More Than ABCs, and I've heard other people say this too, that the alphabet typically has nothing to do with whether or not they learn a word or a sentence. It has to do with what they are currently doing. And if they say to you, how do you spell whatever, a rocket, then you can say, let's look it up. So what we could do is we can invite children to become part of the process of finding that out, rather than having it simply available as a given tool. What do you think about that?
You know, I love the idea of looking things up because, you know, children in my program have gone home many times telling their parents that I don't know if it's a really good idea that we keep going to Miss Amy's because she doesn't know much of anything. Because my response generally when children ask me a question is, I don't know, how do you think we could find out? So the same type of thing of when they ask, how do we spell that? It's, you know, I wouldn't necessarily say look it up, but a lot of times I'd be, how do you think we could find out? And of course they have all kinds of crazy ideas on how we could find out. And so, and we continue to explore what their ideas are until they are satisfied with the solution. Because if we immediately give them an answer to the question, then we are not teaching them how to find information for themselves. And a lot of times we stop their discovery and exploration. Whereas if they're coming up with the ideas, then the ideas just keep flowing. And it continues, they continue to have the ownership of it.
Yes. Another thing that I find that young children like to do frequently is give out tickets for you racing or doing something wrong, of course. And so they're always saying you're going to be locked up and you need a ticket and all this. So having blank sheets of paper, and I like to include envelopes where if a child says to me, you were speeding, you're going to get a ticket, I'll usually say, well, how much is that ticket? I don't see a ticket. Could you write one up for me? That kind of thing. And of course, they immediately go over and get that blank sheet of paper and fill it out and whatever skills they have at that point. To me, again, that doesn't take away from their play. It actually adds to it in the process. Do you find that children, is it just me or are children giving you tickets?
I haven't gotten any tickets from children in that respect. But a lot of times I've been told that I need a ticket in order to get into the area where they're playing. But I haven't had the police type tickets come up in play with children that I can remember. But many times they'll have, they'll line up chairs or different things and pretend that they're on the train or on the bus and you can't board or come into that area without a ticket. Or, you need an invitation. That's been, like birthday party invitations lately. They've been having their own little parties and their own little picnics and you can't come if you don't have an invitation. So those have been pretty popular of late.
And again, I love those kind of things, and I don't think they're necessarily right or necessarily related to a center as much as the activity, wherever it's taking place, and what kinds of things could we provide to help support that. And I think writing instruments, no matter how we do it, whether or not it's getting it for them or whether or not they're at the age where they can go get it themselves, the close proximity to that actually stimulates that play in terms of that process. And it really, really looks at writing, especially as an integrated part of what we naturally do daily.
Right. And, giving children the opportunity to connect that and make sure that it's really meaningful is really important. And I always go back to the thinking, too, that the only place where we really separate subjects is in school. Because in real life, we don't sit down and go like, okay, I'm going to think about or do some science right now, or, I'm going to do this right now. Everything we do is integrated and it's multifaceted. And, so trying to separate that seems so unnatural.
Yeah, and that's, I think that's a perfect example because we really don't as adults do that. I think the same thing applies to reading or having books available for children. Rather than having a library corner, which I had at one time, a library corner, I prefer to have books placed throughout the home or center so that they're available for children to look at in small clusters with an adult all by themselves, where they have to go to, quote, the library corner. It might not necessarily relate to what I'm doing. And I find that sometimes children who are really active and are told to go over to the library corner to calm down almost is viewed as a punishment rather than part of an exciting adventure that happens.
Right. And, you know, one of the problems I have, Dan, is that I have a serious book problem. We have an overabundance of books in this house. And so books are everywhere because there is absolutely no choice because they are stashed in every nook and cranny where we can fit them.
You know, a couple of my, when I do a PowerPoint presentation, a couple of the photos that I frequently use are from your program. And I think it's, your husband's name is Alan, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, he, you know, and I don't know if everybody knows this, but he's a large male. I mean, big in terms of height, and sitting down with a small cluster of children. And one of my favorites is a little girl who's probably around two or three, kind of holding his earlobe while he's reading the story. And I'm always saying to people, this is what I call a real internet connection, that whole process. You know, such a delightful and warm and appreciative experience that I think you can get more when things are not separated, especially books, when they're just always available everywhere for children. Don't you agree?
Definitely. And, you know, Alan's on the floor all the time with the children. And for those of you who don't know, when Dan's saying he's big, he's 6'7". And, you know, he's a really big guy. And he spends a lot of time on his stomach on the floor reading books with children jumping on his legs and on his back and sitting on there. And a lot of times they'll be on their stomach, you know, crawl up on their stomachs too. Or, you know, but they're, I mean, I don't know how many books we read in a day, but usually one of us is reading a book while the other is doing something else, because it's just when you have books everywhere and children have the opportunity to, you know, bring them up to you and ask you to read, and they're, you know, they're choosing the book. Sometimes we're reading the same book over and over again. I know, like, Don't Wake the Bear has been a favorite lately. And one day I think I read it 21 times from the time we opened until the time we closed. But when you have them available to the children, it's, you know, it's so much more natural. They are drawn to them. They find the books that they love. They ask you to read them. And of course, small clusters. And sometimes everybody comes over, but it's never, we're saying, okay, it's reading time and we're going to do this. It's, hey, will you read this book? Sure. And you start reading. And then all of a sudden everybody's piled on your lap and, you know, right there. And it's so, so much more natural. And it just has a, you know, it starts to build that love of reading and the love of language. Whereas some of the other types of things where it might be more segregated and forced, like you had mentioned, having to go to the library area to calm down, it just, you know, it just gives it a whole different feel and a whole different foundation for that subject.
Right. And I think that some people view book reading or story reading or writing as a quiet time activity, and it really might not be at all. It could be rather interesting, entertaining. Some children get really excited about the book that's being read to, or reading it to other children, or acting it out. And again, that's just part of the natural process. I'm always indicating, if you're going to the library and somebody says shh a lot, you're probably in the wrong place, because, you know, reading is really an exciting adventure. I remember when my wife used to read, she would always read out loud, so I would be hearing it many times because I've already read the book or whatever. And that's what children do sometimes, is they get excited about it. They want to act out the cougar, or they want to act out the bear in the story. And I can't imagine doing that in a quiet way, where books are spread around and become part of the natural process. It just makes it more comfortable for children to understand. The other thing about books is that I like, is that, you know, I've been saying to people, think about observing children's behavior, and you can tell perhaps you might be able to slide a book into an area or that shows them interest. So if they are interested in lots of cars and movement of cars, you might have a book about cars that you just slide in that children can then look at and continue with their adventure in that process. Is that what you do also, is kind of observe and kind of place books other than the ones that we typically have out that are exciting?
We do. And, you know, we have books all over the place. Like I mentioned before, I like to use those, you know, they're made of clear plastic and you can usually fit like four or five, there's like four or five slots in them. And most of the time people use them in offices for forms. So they're not really bookshelves, but it allows you to stack books forward facing, and it takes just such a small area of space on your wall. And I have a lot of the IKEA wooden spice racks that we use as book racks as well. And so I probably have between 20 and 30 between the two of those different spaces in our small, you know, in our small area where books are put. And so we do try to, you know, put books about cars close to where the cars are and books about buildings and things close to where the blocks are. Of course, the children sometimes, like I said, have very different ideas of where certain books should be. And we have a couple of them up in the loft, you know, and books go up and down and all over the place, in addition to some of the regular shelves that we have. So I do try to, you know, try to put some of them there. But the children have gotten really good when they're interested in things about asking for, do you have a book about this? Or, you know, where's the book about bridges? I know we looked at a book about bridges before. And so, you know, it comes a hunt to find where it got stashed last, because again, the children help, you know, help put things where they want. And sometimes they like to, you know, they like to claim one of those little shelves as their own and kind of put their favorite books together in some of them and take the other books out. And I have for the infants and toddlers, I like to use baskets on the floor too. So I have a number of baskets with board books and things right on the floor that just kind of get shuffled around as well, so that they have easy access without trying to have to lift them out or ask us for them. They can dig in the baskets to pull some of those books out. So, but yes, you know, having them around and making sure they know that we have more books to support what they're looking to learn.
Right. And again, that makes it, reading and writing becomes a real natural process. I've even mentioned to people, you might want to think about having books and writing equipment in the bathroom, if that's where some children spend some time. That might be something you might want to consider in terms of that process. At one program I saw where they took hard books, especially the cardboard ones for toddlers and that, and they just put Velcro strips on the back and then had Velcro on the wall, and they just kind of were there available for children, and they didn't take up a lot of space. They weren't stepped on, et cetera, because some people are always concerned that books are going to destroy it. And I find that if they become part of the natural setting, that's less likely to happen.
Right. And, you know, we still have books that get destroyed because we have all, you know, we have such a wide age range again. And, you know, when infants and toddlers get their hands on the books that have the regular paper pages instead of the cardboard pages, pages get ripped because they're still learning how to turn the pages. But, you know, I don't worry so much about that, because if they're ripping, it's a need that has to happen. And if we notice that they're ripping, of course we are, because we're right there. We get them something that they can rip. And let me tell you, the magazines, the newspaper, all of that stuff is plentiful. So we can give them something else to rip. And, you know, whenever a book needs to be fixed, a lot of times some of the children are part of that process. And so, you know, we'll get the tape out and we'll fix it up. And after it's been, you know, taped 100 times or however many times it can survive being taped before we decide it's done, the book is, you know, the book is removed. And then I either get a replacement if it's something that a book that the children love and continue to ask for. But if it's something that isn't really asked for a lot, I wait to order the replacement until somebody does ask for it. Because like I said, we have a book problem. I'm sitting in my attic right now, which is the full size of our house, and my husband built real recently built-in shelves on both ends from floor to ceiling to hold our overstock of books. So, you know, if a few get ripped and don't get into circulation, then I pull a few from upstairs or from the attic to, you know, shuffle in downstairs again. So, we never have a book shortage.
Well, it's at the end of the session, and both Amy and I are very interested in perhaps you thinking outside of the reading and writing center area, and maybe looking at it as more of an integrated natural approach. Thanks so much for letting us shake some bones. If you have questions or want continued discussion, you can email me at dkj5075@aol.com or Amy at...
You can email me at amyahola@hotmail.com or you can find me on Facebook at Child Central Station.
Thanks so much for listening.
Bye-bye.
This has been Shaking Bones. Dan and Amy will be back next week for more Bone Rattling. Stay tuned.
This has been an Explorations Early Learning Upstairs Studio production. Oh.